Emily, and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help. And help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during, wait. Oh, I lied. Skipped ahead. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and have had a spiritual awakening and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the sharing, or I'm sorry, during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. So our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. And then we will split into big breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. And when you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. The breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I have asked Ken to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken, and I'm, yes, still an alcoholic. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you, Ken. Wonderful. All right. And today we'll hear a talk on steps four and five. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, with a focus on fears and sex. And we are hearing from Mags from Belfast. So please let's give a warm welcome to Mags. Come on in.
Thank you so much, Emily. My name is Mags, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's great to be here again with you all. Or, like our Ken says, he says, y'all. Don't you, Ken? That's how you speak. That's me trying to do his accent not very well. And I'm so glad to hear that you're still an alcoholic, Ken. Ken's a good friend. And I got a message from somebody else here on the meeting earlier that mentioned how this group had become a really significant part of their recovery during the pandemic. And that's how I know Ken, who's a significant part of my recovery through that period of time, as are many other people on this screen just now. And isn't that the beauty of our fellowship, to be brought together? Tales is in the foreword to the second edition, doesn't it, that we have to hang together, we have to hang together or die separately, which seems really grim for anybody that's new about, but that I know has become the truth, that I have to hang out with you guys, not just hang out and go to meetings, but I have to be right in the center of those 36 spiritual principles, which have become precious to me. Because as a result of that and this program of action and getting a sponsor and working through the pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, to which our fellowship is named after, I know I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. I have recovered 100%. And for me, alcohol just does not exist in my life in any way, shape, or form. And my drunkalogue is this. It's very short. I drank nearly every single day for 30 years, and now I don't. That's it. And the reason why I don't is because I followed the clear-cut directions that are set out in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is that simple. Now, I hasten to add that I didn't like doing it, but it is a very, very simple program when you follow the clear-cut directions as they are set out. I have come to understand that the 12 steps and having a spiritual awakening as the result of those 12 steps is 100% the easier, softer way. There's no doubt about that. And I made pretty hard going of it 18 months prior to my sobriety date. But you live and you learn. And I now understand that, you know, my time was my time. And the only thing that could beat me into a state of reasonableness, as it talks about in We Agnostics, was the Great Persuader. That being alcohol, the only thing that could bring me to knowing that I had to accept the spiritual help was alcohol itself. And I find that so, I don't think even ironic's the right word, but to think that the thing that was ultimately this really normal substance that I have a really abnormal reaction to was the thing that was going to kill me. I was literally doomed to an alcoholic death. And if that had have happened, I know I would have gone to God. That's what I believe, whatever. It doesn't matter why I believe that, but my soul would have been taken to God. But isn't it amazing that the thing that beat me into a state of reasonableness got me to God in the end through this spiritual awakening as the result of the steps? So there, you know, I call it that loss in continuity, that, you know, I was drinking to live, but drinking to die. And that gap that is in the middle, the fault that was in the middle, much like when there's an earthquake, the fault in the land takes place, the tectonic plates separate, and there's a gap in the land. Well, I was drinking to live and drinking to die. And that fault, the gap in the middle, the only thing that was going to piece me back together again was to pour the love and power and strength of God into me. But the only thing that could create the vacuum was the alcohol. So when Ken says he's still an alcoholic, I have to say, as I sit here in this tiny little kitchen in Belfast, I am delighted to still be able to identify as an alcoholic, because as time has gone on, genuinely, it is one of the greatest gifts that has been given to me. Now, it wasn't like that when I was in the grips of alcoholism, when I couldn't work out what it was that was going on with me. I thought I could have the control. I thought I had the choice. I thought I had the power. I thought I knew what I needed to solve the solution. Because I could solve all of the other solutions in all of my life, but this one had me baffled, completely cut off from the light. And never did I think in my wildest dreams that I would be sitting here talking to a group of other alcoholics, filled with gratitude and overwhelmed sometimes that I can't even find the words to describe how good life is. And the reason why that changed is because when I stopped drinking, I started to understand that this illness centers in my mind. And although we talk about the mental obsession, within step one, I started to learn that my problem was my thinking. All of the things that I carried from the past that I held onto in this given moment, that my thinking was going to take me to a dark place if I didn't follow the prescription that we do every single day of our lives and must do for the rest of our lives. You know, we understand that we have to keep in fit spiritual condition. All we have from alcohol is this daily reprieve, dependent on our spiritual condition. But again, the practice of that becomes the thing that changes that thinking and changes the application of our thinking. And the reason why I'm talking about all of that is because when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought step four and five were the dreaded steps of all. And then kind of skip along a bit to nine, and that was kind of equal. And then skip along a little bit to 12. So at various points along the way, there was terror, fear, anxiety, driven by what I thought I knew because of what I had been listening to in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know what it's like in your part of the world, but there's not very many rooms here in Belfast, the city where I live, that study the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or even follow the big book in their meetings. The majority of the meetings that you will go to, you will hear chapter five, how it works, page 58, 59, and halfway down 60, and you'll rarely hear anything else from the book. But as a newcomer for 18 months before I got to the solution, I was filled with trepidation because people were telling the newcomer, like myself and the returner coming into the room, what horrible steps these were, how difficult they were, how you should take your time over them, how you should really think about your sponsor and who they are and interview them before you decide what is right for you, what if that person is right for you, and so on and so forth. You know, step four in the short form on page 59, as Ken has read out, specifically says a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. Whereas my experience in the first 18 months sitting in the rooms is that people made this feel like a really fearful part of the program. I was filled with dread as to what on earth is going to happen when I have to get to this step, when in actual fact, as it's set out in the pages, it's so clear cut, it is so beautifully written, and it couldn't be clearer as to what action you have to take with regards to this. And equally, when I went into my step five as well, admitted to God, to ourselves and another human being, in the short form on page 59, it's written in that way because the order in which it's written is so important. We admitted to God in the first instance, to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. I thought the most important person that I was saying this out loud to was the sponsor. No one explained to me how this was going to work. Therefore, I avoided it like the plague. And as a result of that, the alcohol continued. the progression of my alcoholism came down a track faster than the fastest freight train that I could ever imagine. And that's when I was doomed to this alcoholic death. But getting into the detail of 4 and 5, specifically around fear and sex, I didn't realize, whilst I was in the grips of the illness, how much fear was driving my thought process, how much I believed that I knew better, how much I believed that I had the solution for everything that was wrong in my life. Yet I was a terrified individual who kept topping up with alcohol because I didn't know what to do with my life. And like it describes on page 67 in such an amazing way, you know, this really short word, my entire life was shot through with it. In any given moment, I could be stricken down with fear and everything changed within that moment. The only way that I can describe it is if you have, you know, like a white t-shirt that's being sold in a store and you've got a red t-shirt beside it. The manufacturer simply has to shoot through the dye to make it go from white to red. And the same happens with me when I'm in a moment of fear. I'm shot through with it. I either freeze or fly, nowhere in between. And as a result of it, I set loads of trains in motion to try and protect myself, to try and organize everybody else. And then the repercussions of that, I feel I don't deserve because I was trying to help the situation, all driven by this fear. And it doesn't make for good outcomes. It really doesn't. And when you move into page 68 in the fear inventory, the simplicity of this inventory is the fact that we simply just have to ask ourselves why we had them. Why do I have all of these fears? And my sponsor brought me through really diligently, right? What is your fears? It doesn't matter whether it was black cats or flying or losing my job or dying. It doesn't matter what the fear is. There's no order of fears. You know, it doesn't matter. The same solution applies. So whatever the fear was, why do you have them? And we just kept asking that question. Why? 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 Because ultimately I got to the point where it says in the next line on 68, wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? I was afraid of black cats because my mum was afraid of black cats. So why are you afraid of black cats? Because my mum told me to. But why? Because I wanted to be a good girl. But why? Because I wanted to prove to my mum that I was a good girl. Why? 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 Why do you keep on doing this? Why are you still afraid of the black cats? Well, obviously it's because my self-reliance has failed me. And what that brings you to is that I'm reliant fully on myself. When in actual fact within this page, they tell us perhaps there's a better way. That you stop relying on your finite self and you trust the infinite power that is the God of your understanding. We are now on a different basis. Right here, right now, whilst you're going through this inventory, you're on a different basis. And I never apologize for relying on God. Absolutely, 100%. I do not apologize for relying on God. You know, people have faith, have courage, is what it tells us in the book. But having gone through this process, having faith in the process, being willing to go through the process, and just simply keeping on turning the pages, turning the pages, turning the pages, something shifted, something happened. I say to sponsees that, you know, all you have to do is show up and be willing to show up. And each time you turn the page, you turn a little bit more of yourself over to the care of God as you understand him. And through this process, most definitely, what I've experienced is that I begin to outgrow my fears without even recognizing it, without even realizing it at times. You're then in these situations which used to baffle you, but you're able now to handle them much more readily because of the power that is working in through me. And though this might sound crazy, but I don't know what that power is. I know it to be God, but I don't know what it is. I can't describe it to you. I can't describe it to you. I don't know what it is. I just know that it is something. It is there. It is present. It has more power. It has more strength. It has more love. It has more presence than anything else that I've ever experienced. And by doing these inventories and having that long talk in step five, these blocks are removed and removed and removed and removed. It's the most incredible experience that I've ever had in my life. And I've done it several times now. And each time I get a layer of the tissues in my makeup stripped back so that I get closer and closer to my innermost self. And I'm able to look at who I truly am as an individual. So I don't know what it is that's happening, but I just know that it is. And it's like step two, isn't it? You're coming to believe that this power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. I've come to believe that this most precious companion that I now have in my life exists. It's there. And as you move into that sex inventory, I mean, I live in a part of the world raised in a particular organized religion where, and from a, you know, a part of the world that, you know, is very, how could we say, tight-lipped when it comes to matters of sex. It's not a topic that you talk about very, very openly in this part of the world whatsoever, or you'll be struck down with lightning and have to have lots of penance and, you know, whatever. So it's not something that is openly talked about. So when I came into the rooms and found out that this is the type of thing that we talked about, I wasn't going to go there with that. But yet the thing about it is that fear and sex are so intrinsically linked together for us alcoholics that there's no point talking about one without talking about the other. But when we go into that sex inventory, it gave me such comfort to know that there's nobody in this fellowship that can be the arbiter of my sex conduct. No one. God will be the only counsel on that. And the same solution applies when I'm having difficulty with relationships, with matters with sex conduct or my behaviors. The solution is still the same. This power greater than myself can mold my ideal better than I could ever do myself. And the previous track record will tell you that. And if I don't do this sex inventory correctly, if I don't shape my sex ideal and allow God to mold it for me, then inevitably I will start drinking again, or inevitably I will go back to my old behaviors and conduct, which invariably will mean I drink again, which was my past record before I got to this solution. And if I'm having troubles with matters of relationships, sex, etc., I work all the harder at helping other people, because the more time I spend helping other people, it takes me away from that imperious urge and enables me to stay out of any of the controversy. It's so incredibly important for me when I'm with newcomers that we talk about this sex very openly, the inventory, what it entails, and the fact that we have to get into the inventories as soon as we can and get out of them as soon as we can to enable us to have this long talk. And you know, in that long talk in five, when I covered all of the resentments, the fears, sex, everything within that, the only way that I could describe it, and people have probably heard me say this before, through this process, I do feel as if my sponsor smashed me into little pieces of glass, smashed me into smithereens. I went into all of these little pieces, and little by little, as we went through step five and started to talk about this stuff, they were able to put me together in a different form. Something started to change. It was like these little pieces of glass had been put together into a beautiful colored mosaic where I was able to look at this beautiful presentation and say, "That's you, Max." For the first time ever in my life, to be able to look at me and say, "Do you know, all of this stuff is okay." My thinking had brought me to dark places. My thinking, my guilt, my shame, my remorse, everything wanted to keep me in a dark place. But as we discovered, uncovered everything, I began to receive a recovered life. I received it. It was given to me because I did what was suggested through this program. And you know, those step five promises, it's important to note, isn't it, that they do become clear once we've taken this step. Withholding nothing. If you withhold something, you will not experience the fifth step promises in totality. I often wondered why I wasn't experiencing the fact that I could sit alone at perfect peace and ease, why the drink problem wasn't being removed. It was because I hadn't taken this step. I was holding on to things, and therefore I was never going to be able to sit comfortably with myself and alone at perfect peace and ease, because I knew I was holding this thing in my head that I needed to disclose. If I was to expect to live long or happily in this world, I had to be honest with everything. You know, it says on 73, I only thought I'd lost my egoism. I only thought I'd lost my fear. Do you see where these thought things keep coming back? And unless I rewire my brain and change my thinking, I'm not going to have the opportunity to recreate my life like it talks about in the doctor's opinion. I don't know how long I have left, so I hope I'm not rambling a lot. Through this process, through finding this relationship with this power greater than myself, and again, some of you may have heard me say this before, and I've said it quite a lot recently, this step five, this long talk with another human being, with another person, and I've done it several times, with different people, because every time I show up and do it with another person, another one of my stage characters gets removed. Another one of the masks gets removed. The layers of the tissue in my makeup get removed. I create more space when I get rid of the blocks. In creating more space, there's more room for the power to get in and to fill me up and fill me up and fill me up. That's what the beauty of this is all about. And to be able to sit alone in perfect peace and ease, knowing that I've been released from the bondage of myself, is incredible. And this is the part that I've been talking about over the last number of weeks, because it's been a revelation to me. And I just, and it might sound stupid because you guys have known this all along anyway, but you know, this power, this strength, this love beyond measure, this love beyond description that comes from this unsuspected inner resource that lives, absolutely 100% lives in my heart. Like it says on page 25, has entered my heart in a way that is miraculous. It is blowing my heart open, where I cannot hold on to your resentment. And if I have one, I know what to do with it in my 10, 11, and 12. And if we could all think about this, perhaps, and hold on to this, that there is something in me, there's something in you that doesn't need your help. There's something inside you that lives in your heart in a way that is miraculous, that just knows what you need. And it knows how to take care of you without your help. That is what is given to us if we clear the blocks, 4, 5, moving into 6 and 7, make the decision in 3 to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him, and all of these remarkable things start to happen. I don't need to work out what my partner is going to be in the future, or who they're going to be and what they do and what they look like and how much money they earn. I don't need to know that for myself. Thank you, Emily. God has that all worked out for me. All I have to keep doing genuinely, like it says on page 20, as an ex-problem drinker, my very life depends upon my constant thought of others. Over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, in our program of action, it tells us when we're having problems, help somebody else, think of somebody else, share with somebody else, help somebody else. That's what I've got to do. And through my daily reprieve in 10, 11, and 12, the way that I can explain it simplistically is that in 10, I live. In 11, I learn. And in 12, I grow. I live, I learn, I grow every single day, spiritual progress every single day by these simple rules, just a few simple rules. And I may have gone way off track in the topic that was set for me, but fear and sex are intrinsically linked together. But this program of action and all that's set out within it enables me to be released from everything in the past and to be able to live right here, right now, in this moment. At the top of page 59, it says, may you find him now. May you find him now. May you find him now. And to be able to live in this precious moment, because I'm no longer affected by the things that are resent from the past, resentments. I live right here, right now. And the only thing that exists in that moment is the pure and utter bliss and love and strength that is given to me, no matter what. So I think I'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening.